tell you until I go to the prelate's office with the proof.
How do you know they are sisters of the...
And what proof do you have? What proof could you get? She searched the darkness for any sign of danger.
One of the sisters has something. A thing of magic. A thing of dark magic. I saw it in her office. It's a little statue. I noticed it one time because she has a number of things, old things everyone thinks are just ancient curiosities. I had seen it before, and like all the rest of the things, it was covered with dust. But this one time, after one of the boys died, I went to her office to talk to her about it, about her report. That little statue was tucked back in a corner, with a book leaning against it, hiding it. And it wasn't covered with dust. It was clean.
That's it? This sister dusted a statue, and you think,
no. No one knows what that statue is. After I saw she had dusted it, I had reason to question what it was. I had to be careful, not let anyone know what I was up to. But I finally found out what it is.
How did you find out?
She remembered her visit to Nathan and her vow never to reveal how she had learned what the statue was.
Never you mind. That is not for you to know.
Margaret, how could you? She cut him off.
I said I'm not telling you. And it isn't important anyway.
What is important is what the statue is, not how I found out about it. It's a man holding up a crystal. The crystal is Quillian.
What's Quillian?
It's an exceedingly rare magic crystal. It has the power to bleed the magic from a wizard.
The surprise of that left him speechless for a moment.
How do you know it's Quillian if it's so rare?
How would you be able to recognize it? Maybe it's just some other crystal that looks similar.
That might be true if it hadn't been used. When Quillian is used to bleed the magic from a wizard, it glows orange with the power of his gift, his Han. For just a brief second, as I left her office, I saw that statue, all clean, hiding behind that book. The Quillian was glowing orange. But that was before I knew what it was. After I found out, I went back to take it to the prelate as proof, but it no longer was glowing.
What could that mean?
He whispered in a fearful voice. It means that the wizard's power had passed out of the crystal into somebody, a host. Quillian is just a vessel for the gift until it can be placed into someone else. Jedediah, I think the sisters are killing those with the gift and stealing it for themselves. I think they are absorbing the power into themselves.
His voice trembled. On top of what they already are? They now have the power of a wizard's gift?
She nodded.
Yes. That makes them more dangerous than we could even believe, more powerful than we can imagine. That's what scares me the most. Not being put to death for making the accusations, but being found out by these sisters. If they really are taking the power into themselves, I don't know how we can stop them. None of us can match them. I need proof, so the prelate will believe me. Maybe she will know what to do. I certainly don't. What I can't understand is how the sisters are absorbing the gift from the Quillian. The gift of a wizard, his Han, is male. The sisters are female. A female can't just absorb the male Han. It's not that simple. Otherwise, they would simply have bled the Han into themselves when they killed him. If they are really taking the Han from the males into themselves, I don't know how they're doing it.
So what are you doing out here? She folded her arms against an inner chill, even though the air was warm.
Do you remember the other day when Sam Weber and Neville Ranson had completed all the tests and were to have their collars off and leave the palace?
He nodded in the dark.
Yes. I was really disappointed because Sam had promised to come say goodbye and show me he had his Rata Han off. I wanted to wish him well after he was a true wizard. He never came. They told me he left in the night because he didn't want any tearful goodbyes. But Sam was my friend. He was a gentle person, a healer. And it just wasn't like him to leave in that fashion without telling me goodbye. It just wasn't. I was hurt he didn't come by. I really wanted to wish him well.
They killed him.
What?
He sagged down a little.
Oh, dear Creator, no.
His voice broke with tears.
Are you sure? How do you know?
She put a comforting hand on his shoulder.
The day after he supposedly left in such a strange manner, I suspected something terrible had happened. I went to see if the Quillian was glowing again, but the door was shielded.
That doesn't prove anything. Sisters shield their rooms or offices sometimes. You do it yourself when you don't want to be disturbed, like when we are together.
I know, but I wanted to see the Quillian, so I waited around a corner until the sister came to her office. I came out from where I waited, timing it, so that, as I walked past, she would be entering. As I went by, and just before she closed the door behind herself, I saw into her dark office. I saw the statue on the shelf behind the book. It was glowing orange. I'm sorry, Jedediah.
His voice lowered with anger. Who was it? Which sister?
I'm not going to tell you, Jedediah. Not until I can take proof to the prelate. It's too dangerous.
He thought a moment. If this crystal really is Quillian, and it would prove what she is, why wouldn't she hide it better?
Maybe because she didn't think there was a chance of anyone knowing what it was. Maybe because she isn't afraid and doesn't take the time to be any more careful than she thinks necessary.
Then let's go back, break the shield, get the cursed thing, and take it to the prelate. I can break the shield, I know I can.
I was going to do that myself. I went back to do it tonight, but the room wasn't shielded anymore. I snuck in to take the statue, but it was gone. That was when I saw her leaving the palace, and I saw others leaving too. I followed them out here. If I can steal the Quillian while it's glowing, I can prove they are sisters of the dark. I have to stop them before they can suck the life out of anyone else. Jedediah, they're murdering people, but worse, I fear the reason they are doing it.
He let out a soft sigh. All right, but I'm going with you. She gritted her teeth.
No, you are going back.
Margaret, I love you, and if you send me back to worry all alone, I will never forgive you. I'll go to the prelate myself and make the accusation to bring you help. Though I may be put to death for making the accusation, I know it would raise suspicions and maybe an alarm. That's the only other way I'll be able to protect you. Either I go with you or I go to the prelate. I promise you I will. She knew he was telling the truth. Jedediah always kept his promises. Powerful wizards always did. Rising to her knees, she leaned over and put her arms around his neck.
I love you too, Jedediah.
She kissed him deeply as he rose up on his knees to meet her. His hands went under the back of her dress and he gripped her bottom, pulling her against him. The feeling of his hands on her flesh made her moan softly. His hot lips kissed her neck and then her ear, sending shimmers of magic tingling through her. His knee forced her legs apart, giving his hands access to her. She gasped at the contact.
Come away with me now, he whispered in her ear. Let's go back, and you can shield your room, and I'll give you more until you scream. You can scream all you want, and no one will hear you.
She pushed away from him and pulled his hands out from under her dress. He was breaking down her resistance. She found she had to force herself to stop him. He was using his magic to seduce her away from the danger, trying to save her by drawing her away. She knew that if she let it go on for another second, it would work.
Jedediah, she panted in a hoarse whisper, please don't make me have to use the collar to stop you. This is too important. Lives are at stake.
He tried to reach out to her once more, but she sent a cord of power through her hands on his wrists to stop him. She firmly held his hands away.
I know, Margaret. Your life is one of them. I don't want anything to harm you. I love you more than anything in the world.
Jedediah, this is more important than my life. This is about the lives of everyone. I think this is about the Nameless One.
He froze stiff.
You can't be serious.
Why do you think these sisters want this power? What do they need with it? Why would they be willing to kill for it? To what end? Who do you think sisters of the dark serve?
Dear Creator, he whispered slowly, don't let her be right.
His hands came up and held her by her shoulders.
Margaret, who else knows these things? Who have you told?
Only you, Jedediah. I know who 4, maybe 5 of the Sisters of the Dark are, but there are others, and I don't know who they are. I don't know who I can trust. There were 11 I followed out here tonight, but there could easily be more.
What about the prelate? Maybe you shouldn't go to her. She could be with them.
She shook her head with a sigh.
You may be right, but it's the only chance we have.
There is no one else I can think of who can help me. I have to go to her.
She touched her fingertips to his face.
Jedediah, please go back. If anything were to happen to me, then you would be able to do something. There would be someone who knew.
No, I won't leave you. If you make me go back, I will tell the prelate. I love you. I would rather die than live without you.
But there are others to think of, other lives at stake.
I don't care about anyone else. Please, Margaret, don't ask me to leave you to this danger.
Sometimes you can be infuriating, my love.
She took his hands up in hers.
Jedediah, if we are caught...
If we are together, then I accept the risk.
She twined her fingers through his.
Then, be my husband. As we have talked about, if I die tonight, I want it to be as your wife.
He put a hand behind her head and drew her against him. Pulling her hair away from her ear, he whispered softly into it.
That would make me the happiest man in the world. I love you so much, Margaret. But how can we be married here, now?
We can say the words. Our love is all that counts, not some other person saying words for us. Words coming from our hearts will bond us better than anyone else could do.
He squeezed her tight.
This is the happiest moment in my life.
He pulled back, taking up her hands again. In the darkness they looked at each other.
I, Jedediah, pledge to be your husband in life and in death. I offer you my life, my love, and my eternal devotion. May we be bonded in the Creator's eyes and heart, and in our own.
She whispered the words back to him as tears streamed down her cheeks. She had never been so afraid and so happy in all her life. She shook with the need of him. When they finished the words, they kissed. It was the most tender, loving kiss he had ever given her. Tears continued to run down her face as she pressed against him, against his lips. Her hands clutched the back of his broad shoulders, holding him to her. His arms around her made her feel safer and more loved than she had ever felt. At last, they parted. She struggled to catch her breath.
I love you, my husband.
I love you, my wife. Always and forever.
She smiled. Even though she couldn't see it in the dark, she knew he was smiling, too.
Let's go see if we can get some proof. Let's see if we can put a stop to the Sisters of the Dark. Let's make the Creator proud of the Sisters of the Light and a wizard to be.
He squeezed her hand.
Promise me you won't do anything foolish. Promise me you won't try to do anything that might get you killed. I want to spend some time with you in bed, not the woods.
I need to see what they are up to, see if I can find a way to prove all this to the prelate. But they are more powerful than I am, to say nothing of the fact that there are at least 11 of them. On top of that, if they truly are Sisters of the Dark, they have the use of subtractive magic. We have no defense against that. I don't know how we are to get the Quillian away from them. Maybe we will see something else that will help us. If we just keep our eyes open and let the Creator guide us, maybe He will reveal what it is we can do. But I don't want either of us taking any more of a chance than we have to. We must not be discovered.
He nodded.
Good. That's the way I want it too.
But Jedediah, I'm a Sister of the Light. That means I have responsibilities. Responsibilities to the Creator and all His children. Though we are now husband and wife, it's still my job to guide you. In this we are not equals. I'm in charge. And I will only allow you to go with me if you promise to abide by that. You are not yet a full wizard. If I tell you something, you must obey. I'm still better with my Han than you are with yours.
I know, Margaret. One reason I wanted to be your husband is because I respect you. I wouldn't want a weak wife. You have always guided me, and that will not change now. You've given me everything I have. I will follow you always.
With a smile, she shook her head.
You are a marvel, my husband. A marvel of the best kind. You will make a remarkable wizard. Truly remarkable. I've never told you, because I always feared you would let the knowledge swell your head. But some of the sisters say they think you may prove to be the most powerful wizard in 1,000 years.
He didn't speak, and she couldn't see his face. But she was sure he was blushing.
Margaret,
Your eyes are the only ones I need to see filled with pride. She kissed his cheek and then took his hand. Let's go see how we can put a stop to this.
How do you know where they went? How can we follow them? It's dark as pitch in these woods. The trees hide the moon.
She pinched his cheek. A trick my mother taught me. I've never shown it to anyone. When I saw them leaving the palace, I cast a pool of my Han at their feet. They step through it. It leaves tracks of my own Han. Only I can see them. Their footprints are as bright as the sun on a pond to me, but to no other.
You must teach me this trick.
Someday, I promise. Come on.
She led him by the hand as she followed the glow of the sisters' footprints through the dense woods. Distant night birds called in haunting voices. Owls hooted, and other creatures made low screams and clicks. The ground was uneven, tangled with roots and brush, but the glowing footprints helped her see the way. The damp heat made her sweat, causing her dress to cling to her wet skin. When she got home, she would shield her room, and she would have a bath, a long bath, with Jedediah. Then she would let him use his magic on her, and she would use hers on him. They went deeper into the Hagen woods, deeper than she had ever gone before. Vapor drifting from boggy areas carried the pervasive stench of rotting vegetation. They passed through dark gullies veiled with hanging roots and moss that brushed against her face and arms, making her flinch at the unexpected contact. The footprints led up and over sparsely wooded rocky ridges. At the top of one, standing in the still damp air, she looked back, out across the somber landscape. In the far distance, she could see the flickering lights of Tanimura, and set among the lights, rising up in the silvery moonlight, the Palace of the Prophets, its dark shape blocking out the lights of the city beyond. She longed to be back there, to be home, but this was something that had to be done. There was no one else to do it. The lives of everyone depended on her. The Creator was depending on her. Still, she longed to be home and safe. But home was no longer safe. It was as dangerous as the Hagen Woods, if there really were Sisters of the Dark. Even with as much as she knew, it was difficult for her to accept the idea. The prelate had to believe her. She just had to. There was no one else she could turn to for help. She wished there were even just one sister she could trust, confide in, but she didn't dare trust anyone. Nathan had warned her not to trust anyone. Even though she wished Jedediah were home and safe, she was glad to have him with her. She knew there was nothing he could do to help, but it still felt good to have him to confide in. Her husband. She smiled at the thought. She would never forgive herself if anything happened to him. She would protect him with her life if she had to. The ground pitched into a descent. Through gaps in the trees, she could see they were going down into a deep bowl in the earth. The edge was steep, and they had to move slowly so as not to send any rocks tumbling through the woods. One started to slide as her foot touched it, and she quickly used a handful of air to stop it, and then push it firmly into the ground. She sighed in relief. Jedediah followed her, a silent, comforting shadow. Her tension relaxed a little when they passed from the loose rock back into denser woods where the ground was mossy and silent to step on. The faint sound of chanting drifted to them through the thick woods, carried on heavy, fetid air. Low, rhythmic, guttural tones of words she couldn't understand resonated in her chest. Even without understanding the words, she felt revulsion at them, as if they made the air reek. Jedediah gripped her upper arm, dragging her to a halt. He put his mouth close to her ear.
"Margaret, please," he whispered. "Let's go back now before it's too late. I'm afraid."
"Jedediah," she growled as she reached up and snatched him by the collar. "This is important. I'm a sister of the light. You're a wizard. What do you think I've been training you for? To stand on a street down in the market and perform tricks? To have people throw coins at you? We serve the Creator. He has given us everything we have so we may use it to help others. Others are in danger. We must help. You're a wizard. Act like one."
She could just see his wide eyes in the faint light. He sagged slightly as the tension went out of his muscles.
"I'm sorry. You're right. Forgive me.
I will do what I must. I promise. Her anger cooled.
I'm afraid to. Touch your Han, keep a firm grip on it, but not too tight. Hold it so you can release it in an instant, as I've taught you. If anything happens, don't hold back. Don't be afraid of how much you might hurt them. If you do need your power, anything less than all of it will not be enough. If you keep your head, you're strong enough to defend yourself. You can do it, Jedediah. Have faith in what I've taught you, what all the sisters have taught you. Have faith in the Creator, in what He has given you. You have it for a reason. We all do. This may be the reason. Tonight may be what you've been called for.
He nodded again, and she turned back to the glowing footprints, following them into the thick forest. They wandered through the trees, toward the center of the bowl, toward where the chanting was coming from. The closer they got, the more the voices made her skin prickle. The voices were sisters. She thought she recognized some of them.
Dear Creator, she prayed, give me the strength to do what I must to help you. Give Jedediah strength too. Help us serve you to help others.
Little flickers of light came through the leaves. They crept closer. The trees around her were huge. The two of them glided from one trunk to another, no longer following the footprints. They could see glimpses now of something through openings in the underbrush. Slowly, they tiptoed forward across the open forest floor beneath large, spreading spruce trees. The needles were soft and quiet to walk on. Shoulder to shoulder, they slid behind low, heavy brush at the edge of the woods. It was as close as they could go. Beyond lay a flat, round, open area. At least 100 candles were set on the ground in a ring like a fence or boundary, as if holding back the dark forest. Inside the candles was a circle drawn on the ground. It looked to be made of white sand that sparkled with little points of prismatic light. It looked like the description of sorcerer's sand she had heard, although she had never actually seen any. It stood out clearly in the candlelight and the light of the moon overhead. Symbols were drawn with the same white sand. They were inside the circle, points of them touching the outer boundary of the circle at irregular intervals. Margaret had never seen the symbols before, but she knew some of the elements of them from an old book. They spoke to the underworld. About halfway in from the outer white line and candles, 11 sisters sat in a circle. Margaret stared harder, trying to see in the dim, flickering light. It looked as if each had a hood over her head, with holes cut for the eyes. They chanted in unison. Shadows from the sisters extended inward to a point in the center. In the center lay a woman, naked, except for a hood like the others. She lay on her back, her hands crossed over her breasts, her legs pressed together. 12. With the one in the center, that made 12. She searched the circle of sisters again. Even with the candles, it was still dark, and the candles were to the sisters' backs. Her eyes stopped on a form on the opposite side of the circle. Her breath caught in her throat. That form was larger than the rest. It was hunched, its head lowered and without a hood. It sat at a convergence of lines in the symbols. It was not a sister. With a start, she saw the faint orange glow. The statue with the Quillian was resting in its lap. She and Jedediah crouched, frozen, watching the circle of sisters as they chanted. After a time, one of them, to the side of the hunched form, stood. The chanting stopped. She spoke short, sharp words in a language Margaret didn't know. At points in the speech, her hand shot into the air, flinging sparkling dust over the naked woman in the center. The dust ignited, bathing the hooded sisters with brief, harsh light. At the flash, they all answered with odd, rhyming words. She and Jedediah exchanged looks, her own confused, frightened feelings reflected in his eyes. The standing sister flung both hands up, calling out a list of strange words. She went to the naked woman, stood at her head, and threw her arms up again. The sparkling dust caught fire once more. This time, the orange glow from the Quillian brightened. The head of the hunched form slowly rose. Margaret made a silent gasp when she saw the face of the beast. its fanged mouth opened with a low growl. The sister drew a delicately wrought silver scepter from her cloak and gave it sharp shakes as she chanted again, sprinkling water over the prone woman. Something was happening to the Quillian. It brightened and then dimmed. The dark eyes of the beast watched the naked woman. Margaret stared wide-eyed. Her heart pounded so hard it felt as if it would tear a hole in her chest. As the Quillian faded, the beast's eyes began to glow orange, the same color orange as the Quillian. As the Quillian dimmed, the glow in the beast's eyes intensified, until the little statue was dark, and the thing's eyes shined bright. Two more sisters stood. They moved to each side of the first. The first knelt, her hooded head lowered, looking down to the naked woman. "It is time, if you are sure. You know what must be done. The same as has been done to us. You are the last to be offered the gift. Do you wish to accept it?" "Yes. I'm entitled. It's mine. I want it." Margaret thought she knew both voices, but she wasn't sure because the hoods muffled their words. "Then it shall be yours, sister." The other two knelt beside her as she pulled a cloth from her cloak, twisting it between her fists. "You must pass this test of pain to gain the gift. We cannot touch you with our magic while it is being done, but we will help you as best we can." "I will do anything. It's mine. Let it be done." The naked woman spread her arms. The sisters to each side leaned with all their weight on her wrists. The sister at her head held a twisted cloth over the hooded face. "Open your mouth and bite down on this." She put the cloth between the woman's teeth. "Now open your legs. You must keep them open. If you try to close them, it will be a rejection of what you are being offered, and you will lose the chance. Forever." The naked woman stared fixedly up at nothing. She panted with fear, her breast heaving. Slowly, she spread her legs. The beast stirred, giving a low grunt. Margaret gripped Jedediah's forearm, her fingers digging into him. The beast sniffed the air. As it slowly unfolded itself, Margaret saw that it was larger than it had looked when it was all hunched over. It was powerfully built, looking mostly like a man. Flickers of candlelight reflected off sweat-slicked, knotted muscles of its arms and chest. Downy hair started at the narrow hips, growing coarser farther down the legs to the ankles, where it was the longest, thickest. But the head was something other than a man. It was a horror of anger and fangs. A long, thin tongue flicked out, tasting the air. The eyes glowed orange in the dim light, orange with the power of the gift it had absorbed from the Quillian. As it stretched out on its hands and knees toward the naked woman, Margaret almost gasped aloud. She recognized the beast. She had seen a drawing of it in an old book, the same book in which she had seen drawings of some parts of the spells before her. She wanted to scream. It was a Namble, one of the Nameless One's minions. "Oh, dear Creator," she prayed fervently, "please protect us." Growling in a low rumble, its powerful muscles flexing, its haunted eyes glowing orange, the Namble edged like a huge cat toward the woman on the ground. Head low, it crawled between her legs. In a state of ragged fear, the woman still stared up at nothing. The Namble sniffed at her crotch. Its long tongue flicked out, running over her. She flinched, making a small jerk of a sound against the cloth in her teeth, but she kept her legs open. Her eyes did not move. She did not look at the Namble. The sisters in the circle began a soft chant. The Namble licked her again, slower, grunting this time as it did so. She squealed against the rag. Beads of sweat shimmered on her flesh. She kept her legs wide apart. Rising up on its knees, the beast gave a throaty roar to the black sky. Its pointed, barbed, erect phallus stood out, plainly silhouetted against the candles beyond. Muscles bulged in knotted cords along its arms and shoulders as the Namble bent forward, putting a fist to each side of the woman. Its tongue licked out around her throat as it gave a vibrating rumble of a growl. And then it lowered itself, covering her with its massive form. Its hips hunched forward. The woman's eyes winced shut as she screamed against the cloth in her teeth. The Namble gave a quick, powerful thrust, and her eyes snapped open in a panic of pain. Even with the cloth clenched in her teeth, her screams could be heard over the chanting each time the beast knocked the wind from her, adding more force to the shrieks. Margaret had to force herself to take a breath as she watched. She hated these women. They had given themselves over to something unspeakably evil. Still, they were her sisters, and she could hardly bear to watch one being hurt. She realized she was shaking. She clenched the gold flower at her neck in one fist and Jedediah's arm with her other as tears streamed down her face. The beast thrashed at the sister on the ground as the three sisters held her. Her muffled screams of torment ripped at Margaret's heart. The sister holding the cloth finally spoke. "If you want the gift, you must encourage him to give it to you. He will not surrender it unless you overcome his control, unless you take it from him. You must win it from him. Do you understand?" Crying, her eyes shut tight, the woman nodded. The sister pulled the cloth away. "Then he is yours now. Take the gift if you will." The other two released her arms, and the three of them returned to their places in the circle, taking up the chanting with the others. The woman let out a wail that turned Margaret's blood to ice. It made her ears hurt. The woman flung her arms and legs around the Namble, clutching herself to it, moving with it, moving with the chanting. Her screams died away as she panted with the effort. Margaret could watch no longer. She closed her eyes and swallowed back a wail of her own that tried to force itself from her throat. But even with her eyes closed, it was no better. She could still hear it. "Please, dear Creator," she begged in her mind. "Let it end. Please let it end." And then, with a husky grunt, it did. Margaret opened her eyes to see the Namble still, its back hunched. It shuddered, and then slowly went limp. The woman struggled to breathe under its weight. With strength that seemed impossible, she at last pushed the Namble off her. Chest heaving, it rolled to its hands and knees and slunk back to its place in the circle, folding itself into a dark bundle. The chanting had stopped. The woman lay on the ground for a time, panting, recovering. She was covered with a glistening sheen of sweat that reflected the yellow light of the candle flames. Taking one last deep breath, the woman came smoothly to her feet. A dark stain of blood ran down her legs. With a calm awareness that sent a chill up Margaret's spine and caught her breath short, the woman turned to face her, pulling off her hood. The menacing orange glow in her eyes faded, and they returned to the pale blue with dark violet flecks that Margaret knew so well. "Sister Margaret!" Her tone was as mocking as the smile on her thin lips. "Did you enjoy watching? I thought you might." Wide-eyed, Margaret rose slowly to her feet. Across the circle, the sister who had held the cloth also rose and pulled off her hood. "Margaret, dear, how nice of you to show such an interest in our little group. I didn't know you were that stupid. Did you think I let you see the Quillian in my office by accident? That I wasn't aware someone was interested? I had to know who was skulking about, looking into things that were none of their concern. I let you see it. I wasn't sure, though, until you followed us." Her smile froze Margaret's breathing. "Think we are fools? I saw the pool of Han you cast for us to step in. I obliged you. Such a shame. For you." Margaret's hand was clutched tightly around the gold flower at her neck, her fingernails digging into her palm. How could they have seen the pool of her Han? She had underestimated them, that was how. Underestimated what they could do with the gift. It was going to cost her her life. But only her, only her. Please, dear Creator, only her. She could sense Jedediah close at her side. "Jedediah," she whispered, "run. I'll try to hold him off while you escape. Run, my love, run for your life." His powerful hand came up and gripped her upper arm. "I don't think so, my love." Her eyes were captured by his cruelly empty expression. I tried to save you, Margaret. I tried to get you to turn back, but you wouldn't listen. He glanced to the sister across the clearing. If I got her oath, couldn't we just... The sister glared back. He sighed. No, I suppose we couldn't. He gave her a strong shove into the clearing. She came to a stumbling stop at the edge of the candles. She had gone numb. Her mind refused to work. Her voice refused to work. The sister across the circle clasped her hands together, looking to Jedediah. Has she told anyone else? No, just me. She was looking for proof before she went to anyone else for help. His eyes returned to her. Isn't that right, my love? He shook his head again, the smirk of a smile touching his lips. Lips she had kissed. She felt sick. She felt like the biggest fool the Creator had ever seen. Such a shame. You have done well, Jedediah. You will be rewarded. As for you, Margaret, well, tomorrow Jedediah will report that after trying to avoid the insistent affections of an older woman, he finally and firmly rejected you for good, and you ran away in shame and humiliation. If they come here and find your bones, it will confirm their fears that you chose to end your life because you felt unworthy to live any longer as a sister of the light. The dark-flecked eyes glided back to Margaret. Let me have her. Let me test my new gift. Let me taste it. Those eyes kept Margaret frozen, her hand still clutching the gold flower at her neck. She could hardly breathe through the numbing agony of knowing Jedediah had betrayed her. She had prayed to the Creator to give Jedediah strength, strength to help others. She had had no idea who those others would be. The Creator had answered her prayers, foolish as they had been. When the sister consented, the thin lips widened into a greedy grin. Margaret felt naked, helpless, in the penetrating gaze of those flecked eyes. At last, Margaret made her mind work. Her thoughts sprang to a terrified groping for a way of escape. She could only think of one thing to do before it was too late. With panicked abandon, she let her Han explode through every fiber of herself and brought forth a shield, the most powerful shield she knew, a shield of air. She made it hard as steel, impenetrable. She poured her hurt and hate into it. The thin smile never left. The flecked eyes didn't move. Air, is it then? With the gift I can see it now. Shall I show you what I can do with air? What the gift can do with it? The Creator's power will protect me, Margaret managed. The thin smile turned to a sneer. You think so? Let me show you the Creator's impotence. Her hand came up. Margaret expected a ball of wizard's fire. It wasn't. It was a ball of air so dense she could see it coming. It was so dense it distorted what was seen through it. Margaret could hear the whoosh of its approach, the wail of its power. It went through her shield like flaming pitch through paper. It shouldn't have been able to do that. Her shield was air. Air should not have been able to break a shield of air, not a shield as strong as she had made. But this was air made not by a mere sister, but one with the gift, a wizard's gift. Confused, Margaret realized she was lying on the ground, looking up at the stars, pretty stars, the Creator's stars. She couldn't draw a breath, simply couldn't. She thought it odd. She didn't remember the air hitting her. Only her breath being ripped violently from her lungs. She felt cold, but there was something warm against her face, warm and wet. It was a comfort. Her legs didn't seem to work. Try as she might, she couldn't make them move. With the greatest of effort, she managed to lift her head a bit. The sisters hadn't moved, but now somehow they were farther away. They all watched her. Margaret looked down at herself. Something was terribly wrong. Below her ribs, there was mostly nothing there, just the shredded, wet remains of her insides and then nothing. Where the rest of her should have been, there was nothing. Where had her legs gone? They must be somewhere. They had to be somewhere. There they were. They lay a little distance away, where she had been standing. So, That was why she couldn't take a breath. Air shouldn't have been able to do that. It was impossible. At least air wielded by a sister shouldn't have been able to do that. It was a wonder.
Dear Creator, why have you not helped me? I was doing your work. Why have you let this be done?
It should hurt, shouldn't it? Shouldn't it hurt to be ripped in half? But it didn't. It didn't hurt the least little bit. Cold. She felt only cold. But the warm rope of her guts lying against her face felt good, warm. She took comfort in the warmth. Maybe it didn't hurt because the Creator was helping her. That must be it. The Creator had taken her pain.
Dear Creator, thank you. I did my best. I'm sorry I failed you. Send another.
Boots were near. Jedediah. Husband Jedediah. Monster Jedediah. I tried to warn you, Margaret. I tried to keep you away. You can't say I didn't try. Her arms lay sprawled out to her sides. In her right hand, she could feel the little gold flower. She hadn't let go of it. Even as she was torn in half, she never let go. She tried to now, but she couldn't make her hand open. She wished she had the strength to open her hand. She didn't want to die with that in her hand, but she just couldn't open her fingers.
Dear Creator, I have failed in this too.
Since she couldn't release it, she did the only other thing she could think of. She sent the rest of her power into it. Maybe someone would see and ask the right question. Tired. She was so very tired. She tried to close her eyes, but they wouldn't close. How could a person die if they couldn't close their eyes? There were a lot of stars, pretty stars. There seemed to be fewer than she remembered. Hardly any at all. She thought her mother had told her once how many there were, but she couldn't remember. Well, she would just have to count them. One, two. Chapter 21. How long? Chase asked. The seven fierce-looking men that were squatted down in a half-circle before her and Chase just stared at him and blinked. None of the seven had any weapons except belt knives, and one didn't even have that. But there were a lot of other men standing behind them, and they all had bows, or spears, or both. Rachel tugged her thick brown woolen cloak tighter around herself and shifted her weight as she squatted, wiggling her toes, wishing her feet weren't so cold. They were starting to tingle. She stroked her fingers over the big amber stone hanging on the chain from her neck. Its smooth teardrop shape felt warm against her fingers. Chase mumbled something Rachel couldn't understand as he pushed his heavy black cloak back over his shoulders and then pointed with a stick at the two people drawn in the dirt. All the leather belts for his weapons creaked as he leaned forward on boots big enough for any of the other men to fit both of their feet into just one. He tapped his stick on the ground again, then turned and pushed his hand out toward the grassland. How long? He pointed at the drawing and pushed his hand out a few more times. How long since they left? They chattered something Chase and she couldn't understand. And then the man with the long silver hair falling down around his sun-brown face, the one who didn't have a coyote hide around his shoulders, but wore only simple buckskin clothes, drew another picture in the dirt. She could tell what it was easy this time. It was the sun. He made marks under it. Chase watched as the man drew three rows of marks under the picture of the sun. He stopped. Chase stared at the picture. 3 weeks. He looked up at the man with the long hair. 3 weeks? He pointed at the sun on the ground and held up most of his fingers three times. They've been gone 3 weeks? The man nodded and made some more of those funny words. Sidon handed her another piece of flatbread with honey. It tasted wonderful. She tried to eat it slowly, but it was gone before she knew it. She had tasted honey only once before, back at the castle when she lived there as the princess's playmate. The princess never let her have honey, said it wasn't for the likes of her, but one of the cooks had given her some once. Her stomach fluttered at the memory of how mean the princess had been to her. She never wanted to live in a castle again. Now that she was Chase's daughter, she would never have to. Every night she lay in her blankets before she went to sleep and wondered what the rest of her new family was like.
Che said she would have sisters and brothers, and a real mother. He said she would have to mind her new mother. She could do that. It was easy to mind when someone loved you. Chase loved her. He never really said it, but it was easy to tell. He put his huge arm around her and stroked her hair when she was afraid of sounds in the dark. Siddon smiled at her as he licked the honey off his fingers. It was nice to see him again. When they had first come here, she thought there was going to be trouble. Scary men, all painted with mud and with grass stuck all over themselves, came up to them when they were still out on the grassland. She didn't even see where they came from. They were just there all of a sudden. Rachel was afraid at first because the men pointed arrows at them, and their voices sounded scary and she couldn't understand what they said. But Chase just got off the horse and held her in his arms while he watched them. He didn't even draw his sword or anything. She didn't think anything scared him. He was the bravest man she ever saw. The men had looked at her as she stared at them, and Chase stroked her hair and told her not to be afraid. The men stopped pointing the arrows at them and led them to the village. When they got here, she saw Siddon. Siddon knew her and Chase from before when Kaelin had saved him from Queen Melina back in the castle. Zed, Kaelin, Chase, Siddon, and she had all been together when they were running with the box. She couldn't speak Siddon's language, but he knew them and told his father who they were. After that, everyone was real nice to them. Chase pointed with one finger to one of the pictures of a person, the finger of his other hand to the other picture, and then held the fingers together and pointed away, moving his hand like they were going over hills. Richard and Kaelin left 3 weeks ago, and they went north to Adendrill. The men all shook their heads and started jabbering again. Siddon's father held up his hand for quiet. He pointed at himself and the other man and held up three fingers. Then he pointed at the picture on the ground that had a dress and said Kaelin's name, and then he pointed north. Chase pointed at the picture of the sun, then the picture of Kaelin, then at the men, holding up three fingers, then north. 3 weeks ago, Kaelin and three of your men went north to Adendrill? The men all nodded and said, Kaelin and Adendrill. Chase put a knee to the ground as he leaned forward, tapping the picture of the other person. But Richard went too. He pointed north again. Richard went to Adendrill too, with Kaelin. The men all turned to the man with the long silver hair. He looked at Chase and then shook his head. The carved piece of bone hanging from a leather thong around his neck swung back and forth. He pointed down at the picture of the man with the sword and then pointed in a different direction. Chase stared at the man for a long minute. Then he frowned, as if he didn't understand. The man leaned over with the stick and drew three more people, each with a dress. He looked up from under his eyebrows, as if he wanted to make sure Chase was watching, and then he drew an X across two of the figures. His eyes returned to Chase again as he folded his arms over his knees, waiting. What does that mean? Dead? Is that what you mean, they are dead? The men stared, not moving. Chase pulled a single finger like a knife across his throat. Dead? The man with the silver hair gave one nod and said, Dead. But it sounded a little funny the way he made the word seem longer than it should. He pointed with his stick to the picture of the sun, then the picture of Kaelin, and then he pointed over his shoulder to the way they went. He pointed to the sun again, then at the picture of Richard, then at the picture of the woman without the X. Then he pointed in a different direction. Chase stood. His chest rose and then fell as he let out the deep breath. He was awfully tall. He stared in the direction the man with the silver hair said Richard had gone. East. That's deeper into the wilds, he whispered to himself. Why isn't he with Kaelin? He rubbed his chin. Rachel thought he looked worried. It couldn't be that he looked scared. Nothing scared Chase. Dear spirits, why would Richard go deeper into the wilds? What could possess Kaelin to let that boy go into the wilds? And who is he with? The men all glanced at each other as if they were wondering why Chase was talking to the air. Chase squatted back down, all his leather creaking, and pointed at the drawing of the third woman and frowned and shrugged at the men. He pointed at the picture of Richard and the woman and pointed east again. He held the palms of his hands
up near his shoulders as he shrugged and made faces to show he didn't understand. The man with the long silver hair gave Chase a sad look as he let out a long breath. He pointed at the third woman, the one without an X, and then he turned and took a rope from a man behind him. He wrapped the rope around his own neck. He looked to Chase's frown, and then he pointed to the picture of Richard. When Chase looked up and their eyes met, the man pulled the rope tight with a snap. He pointed east. He touched the stick to the picture of Kalen and then pulled his fingers down his cheeks from the corners of his eye, like tears, then pointed north. Chase stood. It was almost a jump. His face was pale. "She took him," he whispered. "This woman captured Richard and took him into the wilds." Rachel stood next to him. "What does it mean, Chase? Why didn't Kalen go with him?" He looked down at her. His face had an odd, still look that made her stomach knot up. She went for help. She went to Adendrill to get Zed. No one made a sound. He stared back out to the east as he hooked a thumb behind his big silver belt buckle. "Dear spirits," he whispered to himself, "if Richard really did go into the wilds, turn him north. Don't let him go to the south, or even Zed won't be able to help him." Rachel hugged her doll tight. "What's the wilds?" "A very bad place, little one." He stared out unblinking toward the darkening sky. "A very bad place." The way he said it, all calm and quiet, gave her goosebumps. Zed could feel the muscles in the horse's back flexing under him as he ducked beneath a branch while slowing the animal. Zed favored riding bareback. If he needed to ride a horse, he preferred to let the animal feel as unencumbered as possible. He thought it only fair. Most seemed to appreciate his consideration, this one especially. She gave him more than she ever would have under a saddle. And he had taken everything she had given. He had proffered his saddle and the rest of the tack to a man named Half. Half had the biggest ears Zed had ever seen. How a man with ears the like of those had ever found a wife was a wonder. But have a wife he did, and four children, too. And he looked to have more need of the tack than Zed. Not to ride, of course, but to sell. His crops and stores had been carried off by soldiers of the Daharan army. It was the least Zed could do. After all, Rachel was soaked to the bone, and Half offered them a dry place to sleep, even if it was in a dilapidated little barn. And his wife offered them a cabbage soup, thin as it was, asking nothing in return. It was worth a saddle just to see the look on Chase's face when Zed said he wasn't hungry. The big man ate enough for three men, though, and he should have known better. There was going to be much hunger this winter. The tack wouldn't bring its worth. Not with hunger spreading like a dark wind before a thunderhead, but it would bring something, maybe enough to take the hardest edge off the winter. Zed saw Chase put a coin in each of the four children's pockets when he thought no one was looking, growling at them in a tone that would make a grown man blanch, but which for some odd reason made children only smile. Not to look in the pocket until he was gone. He hoped it wasn't gold. The boundary warden could smell a thief open a window in the next town and probably tell you his name, too, but he had no wits about him around children. Half suspiciously wanted to know what he was to do in return for the tack. Zed told him he was to swear his undying loyalty to the Mother Confessor and the new Lord Rawl of Dahara, both of whom had put a stop to things the like of which had been done to him. The man had stared at him, his big ears sticking out under that ridiculous knit hat with a tassel on each side that only served to draw attention where it wasn't needed, and had said, "Done," with a firm nod. A small start, one loyal for the price of a saddle. That it would all be so easy. But that was weeks ago. Now he was alone. The sweet smell of a birch fire drifted to him through the thick woods, the horse lifting her nose to it as she stepped carefully along the narrow path. In the still air, gathering darkness sent deepening shadows across the way. Even before the small house came into view, he could hear the racket, the sound of furniture being overturned, the crash of pots and pans and demons being cursed. The horse's ears pricked toward the commotion as they rode down the twisting trail. Zeb gave her a reassuring pat on the neck. The little house, wood walls dark with age, and a roof thickly layered with ferns and dry pine needles, was set back into the towering trees, nestled among rough trunks dark in the day's end. He dismounted to the side of the brown dead fern spreading like a garden in front of the house. The horse rolled her eyes toward him as he came around to give her a scratch under her jaw.
"Be a good girl and find yourself something to eat."
He put a finger under the horse's chin, forcing her head up.
"But stay close."
The horse nickered. With a smile, Zed rubbed her gray nose.
"Good girl."
From inside the house came a low growl interspersed with angry clicks. Something heavy thudded to the floor, accompanied by a thick oath in a foreign tongue.
"Come out from under there, you vile beast!"
Zed grinned at the sound of the familiar, raspy voice. He watched the horse stroll off a ways to gaze on tufts of dry grass, lifting her head while she chewed, to look back toward the house at each sharp thump. Zed sauntered up the curving walk toward the house. He paused, turning full around twice to admire the beauty of the surrounding woods. They truly were a wonder, calm and peaceful in a place that had been a pass through one of the most dangerous spots in the world, the boundary. But the boundary was gone now, yet the woods were a serene refuge. Imbued with an almost palpable tranquility that Zed knew wasn't natural. They had been infused with those qualities at the skilled hands of the woman who at that very moment was throwing curses bold enough to make a battle-hardened Sandarian lancer blush. And he had seen one of those curse his own queen into a dead faint. That, of course, had only earned the man the rope. The fellow had had a few things to say to the hangman, too, which in turn didn't bring him a clean drop, but did offer him the opportunity to get off one last eloquent, if vulgar, oath. The other lancers seemed to think the trade worth the price. For her part, the queen never seemed to fully recover her delicate air, and thereafter always flushed a fabulous red at the mere sight of one of her lancers, needing to be fanned furiously by her attendants in order to remain conscious. She would probably have had them all hanged, had they not saved her throne, to say nothing of her dainty neck, on more than one occasion. But that was a long time ago, in another war. Clasping his hands together behind himself, Zed inhaled deeply, relishing the clean, crisp air. Bending over, he plucked a dry, wilted wild rose, and with a wisp of magic, brought it to fresh bloom. The yellow petals spread and swelled with new vitality. Closing his eyes, he took a deep whiff of the flower and then idly stuck it in his robes over his breast. He was in no hurry. It was not wise to interrupt a sorceress in a snit. Through the open door came a more serious curse as the object of the sorceress's ire was at last brought to account. With a whack from the blunt end of an axe, the thing was sent flying through the doorway. The small armored beast landed on its back at Zed's feet, wobbling. It clicked and growled as it raked the air with its claws, trying to right itself. It appeared no worse for the axe, or for its brief flight and rough landing. Filthy gripper. It was a gripper that had attached itself to Addie's ankle before. Once a gripper had you, there was virtually no way to get it off. It held on with those claws and rasped its teeth into you down to bone, sucking your blood with its puckered, fang-ringed mouth. They never let go as long as there was blood to feed on, and that armor shed any counterattack. Addie had used an axe to chop off her foot where the gripper had been attached. Chopped off her own foot to save her life. Thinking about it turned his stomach. He watched the beast at his feet for a moment, then gave it a casual kick, sending it a goodly distance. Landing right side up, it waddled off into the woods in search of easier prey. Zed looked up at the figure standing in the doorway, scowling at him with her completely white eyes, her breast still heaving. She wore robes the same light burlap color as his, but unlike his, hers were decorated at the neck with yellow and red beads sewn in the ancient symbols of her profession. She put her fists on her hips. The scowl held a firm grip on her features, not that it diminished in the least how handsome they were. She still held the axe in one hand, though, a worrisome sign. Best not to trouble her too quickly with what he wanted. Zed smiled.
You really shouldn't play with grippers, Addy. That's how you lost your foot the last time, you know.
He plucked the yellow rose from its place at his chest. His thin lips pushed his wrinkled cheeks back farther as his smile widened.
Got anything to eat? I'm starving.
She watched him silently for a moment without moving, then slipped the axe head to the floor and leaned the handle against the wall just inside the door.
What do you be doing here, wizard?
Zed stepped onto the tiny porch and gave a dramatic bow. When he came up, he offered her the flower as if it were a priceless jewel.
I just couldn't stay away from your tender embrace, dear lady.
He flashed his most irresistible smile. Addy studied him a moment with those white eyes.
That be a lie.
Zed cleared his throat and pressed the flower closer. He thought maybe he needed to practice his smile.
Is that stew I smell?
Without taking her gaze from him, she accepted the flower, sticking it in her straight, jaw-length black and gray hair. She truly was handsome.
It be stew.
Her soft, thin hands took his. A small smile stole onto her finely wrinkled face, and she gave a slight nod.
It be good to see you again, Zed. For a time, I feared I never would. I spent many a night in a sweat, knowing what would happen had you failed. When winter came and the magic of Ordon didn't sweep the land, I knew you had succeeded.
Zed was encouraged that his best smile hadn't been wasted after all, but he was careful with his answer.
Darkenrall has been defeated.
What of Richard and Kaelin? Do they be safe?
Zed puffed up with pride.
Yes, in fact, Richard was the one who defeated Darkenrall.
She nodded again.
I think there be more to the story.
He shrugged, trying to make it seem less important than it was.
A bit of a tale.
Though the small smile still rested easily on her face, her white eyes seemed to be weighing his soul.
And there be a reason you be here. A reason I fear I won't like.
He pulled his hands out of hers and pushed some of his unruly wavy white hair back while frowning.
Bags, woman. Are you going to feed me any of that stew or not?
Addy finally withdrew her white eyes from him and turned back into her home.
I think there be enough stew even for you. Come in and shut the door. I do not wish to see another gripper tonight.
Invited in. Well, things were going smoothly. He wondered how much he was going to have to tell her. Not all, he hoped. Wizard's work, using people. The worst of it was using people he liked. Especially people he liked deeply. As Zed helped her right the chairs and table and pick up the pots and tin plates strewn about the floor, he began telling her of the things that had happened since he had been with her last. He started with the harrowing tale of going through the pass, protected somewhat by the bone she had given him to hide him from the beasts. He still had the bone on a thin leather thong around his neck, seeing no need to be rid of it after he had gotten safely through. She listened without comment as he wove the tale. And when he told of Richard's capture by the Mord Sith, she didn't turn to show her face, but he saw the muscles in her shoulders tense for the briefest of moments. With no small amount of emphasis to make his point, he related how Darkenrall had taken the Nightstone from Richard, the Nightstone she had given him to see him safely through the pass. He scowled at her back as she picked a plate off the floor.
I was nearly killed by that stone. Darkenrall used it to trap me in the underworld. I escaped by the thinnest of hairs. You almost got me killed, giving that thing to Richard.
Do not be a thick-headed fool, she scoffed. You be smart enough to save yourself. Had I not given the Nightstone to Richard, he would have died in the pass. And then Darkenrall would have won, and right now would no doubt be torturing you. You would soon be dead. By giving the stone to Richard, I saved your life.
He shook a leg bone of some sort at the glance she cast over her shoulder.
That thing was dangerous. You shouldn't go handing out dangerous things as if they were a stick of candy. Not without warning people, anyway.
He had a right to be indignant. He had been the one sucked into the underworld by that wretched stone. The woman could at least pretend to be contrite. Zed went on with the story of how Richard had escaped, although he had a web around him hiding his identity, and how the quads had attacked Chase, Kalen, and himself. He had to make an effort to control his voice at the telling of what had almost happened to Kalen, and how she had called forth the Khandar and killed their attackers. He finished with how Richard had tricked Darkin Rall into opening the wrong box. He told her how the magic of Orden had taken Darkin Rall for his mistake. Zed smiled to himself as he reached the end of the story, telling her that Richard had somehow gotten past Kalen's power, that they were free to love each other. He wasn't about to tell her how. That was not for anyone to know. And they were happily together now. He was pleased that he had managed to tell the story without having to delve too deeply into some of the more painful events. He didn't want to have to revisit some of those hurts. She didn't ask any questions, but came and put a hand on his shoulder, saying that she was relieved all of them had survived and won. Zed was silent after the telling, at least as much as he wanted to tell, of the tale. He set to stacking the pile of loose bones into the corner, where she said they belonged. By the way they were scattered about, the Gripper must have sought refuge in them. A sorry mistake. That people called Addie the Bone Woman was small wonder. The house had little else in it. Her life seemed devoted to bones. A sorceress dedicated to bones was a troubling concept. He saw little evidence of potions, powders, or the usual type of charms, any of the typical things he knew to expect from a woman of her talents. He knew what she was probing into, just not why. Sorceresses usually confined their concerns to things living. She was a searcher into things dark and dangerous, things dead. Unfortunately, that was what he was doing, too. If you wanted to know about fire, you had to study it, he guessed. Of course, it was a good way to get burned. He knew he didn't like the analogy the moment it popped into his head. He looked up from the bone pile as he placed the last of them. If you don't want grippers in your house, Addie, you should keep your door closed. His perfectly apt scolding frown was wasted, as she didn't turn from her task of stacking the firewood back in its bin at the side of the hearth. The door be closed and bolted, she said in her dry rasp, in a tone seemingly meant to wither his unseen scowl. This be the third time. Picking up a bone that had been hiding behind a stick of firewood, she straightened and carried it to him. Before the grippers never came near my house. Her voice lowered, as if in a threat to unseen ears. I saw to that. She handed over the thick, white rib bone, peering down at him as he squatted on the floor next to the bone pile. Now, since winter, they come near. The bones no longer seem to keep them away. The reason be a mystery to me. Addie had lived in this pass a long time. No one knew as well as she its dangers, its quirks, its vagaries. None knew better than she what it took to be safe here, to